Shalom, shalom, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Pulse of Israel. I am not in our eternal and ancestral homeland, the land of Israel, or our beautiful Judean hills like I usually am. Today, I'm in Washington, D.C. with Karis Rea, and Karis is a producer for Epoch Times or the Epoch News Network,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is an unbelievably fast-growing media outlet. And we're going to be talking about something that's really scary, and you guys hear me talk about this all the time, that while the majority of Jew hatred, right, Jew hating anti-Semitism today is really from the Muslim community and the progressive left community, it's always been on the right, on the far right, and that's growing. And Karis is on top of this. So first of all, thank you so much for joining me, Karis.
Thank you for having me. I love what you do. I've known about you forever and your amazing work, and it's great to be here in person.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. And you know what? Before we talk about this heavy topic, you mentioned something to more that is inspiring about your parents who just visited Israel. You mind sharing that with me? Because I'd love to start with this positive.
Yeah. They're in Israel right now. I've been kind of living vicariously as they share all their experiences with me. They've been going around to different hospitals and meeting with injured soldiers. They started with the amputees. Then they went to the soldiers that had spinal injuries. And then they went to the most serious injuries, which were brain damage, essentially. And, they've just been, it's been such a powerful, powerful experience, one of the most meaningful experiences of their lives. And one of the things they told me was that a lot of these soldiers that they are meeting are getting married. They're tying the knot. They've had, these relationships for however many months or years, and post October 7th, and them being, in critical care has just made them realize how important it is to carry on the Jewish lineage, and to get married and to start a family. And it's amazing. They're all just kind of doing these impromptu ceremonies, just like, we gotta do it now, right away.
I know. I've talked to my audience a lot about the spiritual revolution that's taking place, especially in the Jewish people in Israel as a result of October 7th. And you could say it's one, because all of a sudden life has been internalized to be that much more precious than before. Mm-hmm. And then realizing to focus on it more. And then also in terms of the Jewish traditions and Jewish life and having children. And it's fabulous, like just taking this to a global level. If I'm not mistaken, Israel is probably the only Western culture-oriented country where we have a more than 2-3+ child per family statistic.
I think it's the only country with a positive birth rate.
Exactly.
Like I think every other Western country has a negative birth rate.
Exactly. And you want to know something? To me, what that shows, because I'm not always comfortable calling Israel a Western country.
Yeah.
Because part of what I believe also this whole process is having, again, it's mostly Jews in Israel, us realize the Western world is basically giving us a slap in the face, like in terms of how they've turned their backs on standing up for our basic right to defend ourselves against evil and calling out that evil. And many Jews in Israel are realizing, wait a second, we're not part of the Western world. We're Jews in the Middle East. And that is, we're the Jewish people. We're not Western. We're not Eastern. We're not Middle Eastern. We're Jews from the land of Israel. And we're witnessing a process of returning and owning a real identity that we're supposed to be. So, and that's, I guess, is a very good sign of that. Like, yeah, we inertly understand the importance of family and having children, which is a big thing that differentiates from the Western world, where there's a negative.
And I think what's incredible is it's not only the religious, the Orthodox in Israel, the secular Jews too.
100%, which, and what I actually like to say, like, there are very, very few secular Jews in Israel. It's just people are not as religious. Mm-hmm. It's like they have a Jewish identity.
Right.
So the majority of Jews in Israel have a strong Jewish identity. Some are more religious than others. Everyone decides how they're going to live their personal life, and that's up to them and God. But, so thank you so much for sharing that, because that really It's important. It's important people hear that. Mm-hmm. All right. So now let's get back to the heavy topic, which is so important. The growth of this anti-Semitism from the far right.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start with that, Karis? Because you're on top of this.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's from the far right. I think it's just within the conservative movement. I think I've been seeing various streams of it from different camps within the conservative movement. Before October 7th, I've seen it since, you know, the Ukraine war really picked up. One strain I saw was within the health freedom movement, which is actually not even so much of a concern. It's kind of a blend of conservatives and former liberals that have been kind of black-pilled and now they're independent or they're voting red by default, you know. But a lot of those people in the health freedom or the sovereignty movement, there's different names for it. They're people who were, you know, and I myself consider that movement to very much align with my values in a lot of ways. You know, I work for EPOP. We're really big on health stuff, very much anti-lockdown, very much anti the COVID vaccines, the genetic vaccines. So, you know, I'm part of this world in a big sense. And a lot of these people view everything through the lens of a psyop.
Yes.
They have been so black-pilled, understandably, over the last few years, you know, being called conspiracy theorists and then finding out that all of these so-called conspiracies turned out to be true, like the lab origin of the virus. I mean, there's so many. Russiagate, there's so many like this. And, you know, they've seen the hand that and our intelligence agencies have played in so much conflict and censorship and activity that's contrary to our Constitution and the First Amendment, that now they kind of just have lumped October 7th in with this. You know, they're also very wary of globalist agendas. They see the hand that the World Economic Forum and the United Nations have in these very destructive movements like 30 by 30, you know, things that are really taking away state sovereignty. And so they've just decided that October 7th, that because, you know, it was such a massive intelligence failure and it took everybody by surprise, that it must have been an inside job. It must have been a false flag attack. Netanyahu has been at the World Economic, has been at Davos before. So he must be part of the globalist agenda. And they're really pushing this and they're still pushing it to this day, even though many of the holes from October 7th have been filled in. We now know, you know, not, you know, the commission obviously hasn't commenced, but we've been able, journalists and think tanks have been able to put together some of the pieces and understand how some of this was able to be carried out. And yet these health freedom movement, they're not following that. They're just happy. They're just, you know, they're just happy saying this couldn't have possibly happened. And therefore it must be the work of the globalists. And they don't realize that they are playing into anti-Semitic tropes on the right.
Right.
Of globalist Jews manipulating the strings, controlling immigration, you know. So that's one strain that I see. I don't particularly think that's a very pernicious strain. The one that I find more disturbing is the neo-isolationists, such as Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens. There's some others as well. And these people who consider themselves America first have this kind of blanket worldview where they think that because, you know, I mean, Biden lumped in this huge bill, this $44 billion bill, right? Aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, as if they're the same thing.
Right. But
that's how these neo-isolationists are seeing it, right?
Exactly.
They're seeing Israel aid as just another
global play by the Biden administration or U.S. foreign
right?
Yeah, policy.
Right?
They Ukraine believe, is like Israel.
Right. They believe that we should, that America should pull out, that we shouldn't be involved in any foreign activity, right? That we should pull out all of our, we should pull all of our aid from the countries. We should, you know, get our troops out of everywhere and really focused on domestic issues. And I, you know, theoretically, this sounds great.
And you want to know something? It wouldn't be an issue if America would focus on domestic issues and then also focus on foreign policy. But unfortunately, because at least now and many times the American establishment does not take care of the American people, or for many of the American people, the perception is like, you're letting our country go to hell in a wastebasket, and yet you're spending trillions, I think it was over $100 trillion that America's given to Ukraine the past couple of years. So it's like, it's like putting in their hands to make that claim.
Right. I understand the intent of that worldview. It's completely valid. Look at our border, look at our schools. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely a mess what's going on. America doesn't look like America anymore.
Right. And the problem is turning that into like Jew hatred by certain audiences.
Because what they're doing is it's not when it comes to aid in Israel, they're not having a good faith conversation about it. So like, you know, whether we could, should, it's not like they're not sitting around being like, okay, well, what does this aid actually mean? Right. They don't know that 75% of it has to be spent in the U.S.
I think now it's 100%.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was one of the strings that Obama included in his $3 billion a year thing. He upped it from 75% to 100%.
So it's even.
But it's not money going to Israel. It's money that's going to America.
There's now even more people more Americans that it's giving jobs to, right. Essentially.
Correct.
So it's giving tens of thousands of jobs to Americans. Okay, that aid obviously get tremendous intelligence and
technology
from Israel as a result. But they don't know any of this stuff. So it's just, they're just lumping it in. And as a result, they end up kind of pointing the finger at Israel, singling out Israel, never talking about Egypt, right? Which gets the set, you know, very
Egypt, Jordan, the amount of Middle Eastern countries that get billions of dollars every year.
They've lost the plot. They also don't understand that, yes, we give a tremendous amount of aid to Israel, and maybe we shouldn't, and that's a good faith conversation to have. But they're not measuring it in terms of the fact that we don't have any boots on the ground in Israel. So, yes, we might give them a lot of money, but we're not spending any resources on manpower. How many troops do we have throughout Europe? I mean, we pay for half of France's defense budget. Look at Germany, other countries in the Middle East, South America. I mean, we spend so many resources just putting troops on the ground in other countries, but we don't do that in Israel.
Right.
We don't fight Israel's wars
for
Israel. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration when you're about to have that conversation. And if you're not going to have that conversation, then you end up playing into the same anti-Zionist tropes of holding Israel to a double standard, singling Israel out for like unfair condemnation. And that's what these new neo-isolationists are doing.
Right.
And there's a term that Constantine Kissin, a British podcaster and Canadian who I really love him. He's heart of gold. And he runs a popular trigonometry podcast in the UK. And he has coined this term, the woke right, to describe kind of like people like Tucker Carlson, you know, going to Russia and commenting on how clean Putin's subways are, right? And I really relate to this term because this is something that I am seeing among these neo-isolationists. The reason why they are woke is because, like, when I think of woke, I think of people who, in one sense, are very anti-American. And these neo-isolationists, they say they're America first, but if their isolationist policies were actually implemented, right? If we did pull out all of the aid, if we did get out of all the foreign wars, we would end up living in a world that was ruled by China, Iran, Russia, right? These are enemies who have made it clear publicly over and over again that they want the destruction of America, or in Iran's case, the destruction of Western civilization. You don't think they're going to come for us? You think that we can just pull up?
They're already here in America.
There you go. And so in this world, you know, that is supposedly America first, I think it would be America gone. Like, there would be no America. I mean, and the reason why it's anti-American, you know, and a new woke, you know, a new form of wokeness on the right, is because these people don't realize that one of the things that makes America great, one of the fundamental components of American exceptionalism, along with our Constitution and our liberties, right, and our small government and our state rights, is the fact that we have been a beacon of hope for other smaller countries. We have been an example for them, and we have been a country that they can rely on.
Right.
They feel safe from rogue countries trying to aggress upon them, because they're like, we know America has our back. And if they can't rely on America to protect them from rogue, aggressive, tyrannical regimes, then our standing as a superpower is fundamentally diminished, and you know, the American exceptionalism is dead. I really think these neo-isolationists have just completely lost the plot. They're becoming narcissistic, and I really think the woke right is a very appropriate term.
Very interesting. Okay, well, I have two points to follow up with you on regarding the second group you were talking about. And you were very well doing a good job of explaining how Israel does so much for America in exchange for aid that goes back to America. The quote I always like to tell people is of former Secretary of State Alexander Haig, I guess the late 70s, I think. And he basically said that Israel is like a U.S. Air Force carrier in terms of allowing America so much intelligence in the Middle East, and we give is America so much without them having to put one American boot on the ground. And hence, I mean, I wish I could be part of and together with you, whatever, bringing that people to better understand. It's not Israel needs this aid, and we are like Egypt or Jordan, that they give nothing. We are giving value for each and every dollar. So it's not really aid. Rather, it's an exchange. It's a relationship and more of an alliance.
Yeah, as a trade and a trade.
And right, exactly. And that should be part of the discourse to change in Washington, to one, have people stop thinking, oh, we're helping them and I don't want to help them anymore. And instead start thinking, oh, we have to give them this money because they're giving us so much value.
Right.
And then obviously we want to get to the place where American foreign policy stops using that aid as a carrot, as if, oh, if you're good, we'll give it to you. And if you're not, and if you don't listen to us, then we'll punish you because we give you the foreign aid, which is the most poisonous thing about U.S. foreign aid. And the second point, I wanted to counter the Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens thing by suggesting, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, that I actually differentiate between the two. Tucker is isolationist. I don't hear from him anti-Israel, anti-Jew-hating tone, rhetoric, tropes. My fear of Tucker is because of his very strong and persuasive America First perspective that he gives across, and calling out Ben Shapiro and you obviously don't care about America because you're just always talking about Israel, even though he is not giving across an anti-Israel message, but it's food for the fodder for all those of his audience who interpret what he's saying to then go in the anti-Israel direction, as opposed to Candace, who she has turned. She's vocally voicing tropes, interviewing one of the worst Jewish Jew haters out there, Norman Finkelstein, for her program, giving credence to his extremely, extremely divisive, dangerous, lying claims against Israel. So that's the way, like, I separate the two. I'm not saying Tucker isn't. By Tucker not claim, by being more clear, he is dangerous. Mm-hmm. But it's not him that I think is a Jew hater.
No, I think they're 100%. But I, when I'm putting them in the same category, it's because they have their neo-isolationism is the same ideology. You know, right. Obviously they have different focuses on their shows, you know, and Tucker does not address the Israel question.
Or right, he stays away from it.
Like Candace does. There's no doubt about that.
He just uses it to bash Ben Shapiro,
but
because he goes, well, you should be focusing on the border. You should focus on fentanyl. You should focus on U.S. issues if you care about America.
But I will say that Tucker has had a number of very outspoken anti-Semites on his show now, quite a few. Roger Waters, Jackson Hinkle, Kanye West. And, you know, the Kanye West, what was very disturbing about that whole thing was, you know, at that point, you know, I didn't know that Kanye West was an anti-Semite when that interview came out. And I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But then I found out, you know, I think it was Vice News. I'm not a fan of them, but I got to hand it to them.
They've just gone bankrupt. They're closing.
Oh, yeah.
No, no one's buying them, so I'm closing up
that. All right, I'll refrain from saying how I feel about that. You can probably infer, but you know, I'll hand it to them for the fact that they actually ended up releasing footage that Tucker's team cut from that interview that showed Kanye's kind of, you know, Jew-hating side. Like, he said things in that interview that were so inappropriate towards, you know, the Jewish people that even Tucker's key team cut it. And I think that says something about, you know, maybe not what Tucker believes himself, but what he's willing to ignore for the sake of his narrative.
And not pull out.
Right. You know, so I think they're both problematic, but there is no doubt. There is no doubt that Candace Owens is on another level when it comes to this stuff. I mean, you know, I wrote a whole article about her during the Kanye thing, a very, very in-depth article dissecting her psychology. It wasn't a hit piece. I don't believe in those. Epoch doesn't believe in those. It was a very, I think, nuanced analysis of the psychology behind her thinking and how basically when you have a certain type of narcissistic political thinking, you end up, regardless of what you think about yourself, you end up landing on the left because wokeness is inherently narcissistic. Yeah. Things like having a victim complex, you know, and just, you know, all different elements.
And it's so sad because I remember following Candace before she was famous. She had her own independent show called Red Pill, Black Pill on YouTube before she was taken up by Charlie to Turning Point. She was just on her own on a YouTube channel. And she was she wasn't championing being the victim. She was championing being a victor.
Right.
Like trying to empower. It was basically mostly focusing on the Black community and getting out of the victim status.
Yeah.
And calling out how the Black community fell into the victim status. And we can pull ourselves out. She's talking to her Black community. Pull ourselves out of it. And it's sad that with her fame.
Yeah.
She's fall. Anyway, again, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt that she was in a good place and that she's changed. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
I'm just going according to what I was personally seeing and what drew me to want to start following her early on. Again, even before she became famous. But yeah, it's so sad to see that direction. So now I want to go back to the first category, because I specifically have dealt with both of these. But as someone who was very much on top of the medical freedom movement as well, and helped to explain to my audience how, and you touched upon this, when you understand that we are being lied to by the media daily about a lot, mm-hmm. all right? And then all of a sudden, you don't know what to trust and what not to trust.
Yeah.
And again, Russia hoax, Hunter Biden laptop,
mm-hmm.
the whole insanity of COVID, regardless of where you stand on it, the censorship and the punishment
yeah.
and the bullying and it all reeked of so much wrong. What you believe or don't believe doesn't make a difference, but it was the way it was done and forced and shaming. Again, because everyone was shamed to think they're saving their lives and it's about health. Some things were about health, but not to the extent that it needs to be done. All of a sudden, you don't trust anything.
Right.
You don't trust anything. And then once you don't trust anything, then you start going backwards like, oh, so wait a second. So maybe the Rothschilds do run the yes, world.
Totally.
And if it's the Rothschilds who run the world, and the Rothschilds were Jewish, even though, again, I don't think there's anyone in the Rothschild banking family today who's Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically all intermarried out. Who cares about that, right? well, if the Rothschilds, and they run the world, then it's the Zionists, and it's the Israel, and Israel runs the world, and Israel is
exactly.
evil. It just all comes out.
Right, because they don't realize that anti-Semitism is fundamentally a conspiracy. And so, you know, for people like them who've been labeled conspiracy theorists, right, they believed things that were, you know, they pointed out things during the pandemic that were 100% accurate, only to be hit with, oh, you're spreading conspiracy theories. You know, many of them have been vindicated, but there's no accountability.
Right.
And so when you have this attitude of like, okay, well, conspiracy theories are real, then you're prone to step into anti-Semitism, whether you know it or not.
Right.
Because now so many conspiracy theories have turned out to be true. And so these people are just like, oh, well, they're all true then. And there's no line.
Right.
And, you know, anything can be, there's nothing sacred. Anything can be questioned. Right. I mean, and then, I mean, how far a jump from that is it to go into, well, the Holocaust didn't really kill 6 million people, right?
For sure. That's out there. That's out there big time and growing.
And we're seeing that with the 10/7 denialism. I call it the Hamassacre denialism.
Oh, wow.
You know, the people who are denying 10/7 or, you know, coming up with these crazy ideas, like it was the IDF who killed the majority of the people, or there was no rape or anything like that.
Or it didn't even happen. It's all AI, you know,
yeah,
the whole gamut.
And these people are really, really intricate with their analyses in the same exact way that Holocaust deniers are. I mean, Holocaust denial, it's an industry. It's not just, oh, the Holocaust never happened, period. No, there are people who've written books, filled books about how the Holocaust couldn't have like possibly happened. And if you don't know anything about the Holocaust and you read these books, they are so convincing. They really get into the nitty gritty and the details. And I'm seeing the same types of videos about October 7th, right? I saw one the other day. I hate to even talk about it. It's like validating it, you know, just by talking about it. But I saw one that really went viral about this guy talking about how it was just impossible that Hamas could have been responsible for all of the death and destruction, because if you look at certain houses that had been, supposedly destroyed or burned or something, that's not possible because Hamas only came in with AKs or something like that. And you just read this and you're like, And anybody who doesn't know about what happened is like, oh yeah, well that type of gun, you know, I don't really know anything about guns, but that type of gun couldn't have done this damage. But they don't tell you that Hamas came with RPGs.
RPGs and with benzene.
Like, I mean, so it's just, they're just flat out lying.
Right.
But you just, but because they say it with such confidence and they're saying things that are so easily verified to be false, you can't imagine that that could be a lie.
Right.
Like they're just skipping. They're just like, yeah, well, Hamas didn't come in with RPGs and benzene. So of course this couldn't have happened. It's like, no, they actually did. But nobody even like questions them there,
right.
And it's no, just
people are already in them. Right, they're already in the mindset. They're putty to believe
but,
it all.
But I feel like if I was one of these like health freedom people that had no stake in the Israel and the Jewish stuff,
you're touching upon.
And if I saw one of these videos,
yeah,
I might be convinced.
100%. And oh, I'll touch that in a second. Okay, I'm going to come back to that. But I want to give you actually a conspiracy. That's true,
mm-hmm.
Not a theory,
okay.
True, that I've actually spoke about in my programs lately in terms of tying in October 7th to what's going on today, to the Biden administration trying to force a two-state solution, rewarding terrorism, right?
Yeah.
I interviewed, when I was in the middle of IDF reserve duty a few weeks ago, I met and interviewed a retired U.S. soldier,
mm-hmm.
who now lives in Israel, who served in NSA during the Yom Kippur War, okay? And he basically, and again, I have the whole video that I put out there, and he basically tells his story how he knew personally, and U.S. intelligence knew that the war was going to break out. And that basically America betrayed Israel, allowing them to get hit without giving them the information to properly defend themselves. Since that interview, I did a little more deep dive, and I found documentation of Secretary of State Kissinger and President Nixon at the time, as well as Israeli diplomats at the time, that documented how Kissinger is quoted as saying, we're going to let them bleed in order to then force a diplomatic solution on the Middle East, right? And again, all documented, and that he threatened, like Golda Meir found out about the outbreak of the war just hours before. And she called Kissinger immediately, and Kissinger basically threatened that don't you dare have a preemptive strike, and don't even call up the whole reserves.
Oh my God.
Okay, so the American policy, or Kissinger, Nixon policy, which obviously the intelligence services were in on, was to have Israel attacked by surprise, so that we would be down on our knees, and then allow America to sweep in and save us by forcing upon us a horrible diplomatic solution. So I said, listen, this is, it's not a conspiracy theory. That happened, documented. Mm-hmm. Who's to say we're not witnessing the same playbook today? Don't have that proof, but it's just, it's insane that one, the Israeli army did stink. We weren't there for 8 hours. Makes no sense. We're able to have planes in the air in seconds. It makes no sense that it wasn't the army that stopped the massacre. I say one of the miracles of October 7th is that only 1,200 plus innocent civilians were murdered and massacred, because it was hundreds of individual King David like Jews like me and you who just picked up their guns, or even without guns, that just ran down south and started fighting Hamas without any orders, without any army organization, nothing, just individuals, because that's who we are, the Jewish people today in our land of Israel. But there was no army for hours. And then what do we see? We see a diplomatic solution being forced upon us that is totally disconnected from reality. The Israeli people are against, like, total disconnect. So it's like, is it the same playbook being used today?
I mean,
by the Biden administration, I can't say yes or no, but it's definitely plausible, I mean, since it was used before.
We know for a fact that from the whole Malley scandal, you know, now he's been, you know, he's no longer in the State Department. He's being investigated.
Remind Malley, people what the Malley scandal Malley. Is.
He was the special envoy to Iran. And he was kind of, he basically created the nuclear deal that Obama signed, and he's, you know, State Department under Biden as well. And he's a complete shill for Iran. There was an excellent biography, about him that, somebody did, but I mean, his, you know, he comes from a tradition. He comes from a family that is, that has been kind of very anti-American, pro-Soviet and pro, Islamist. And, you know, he's now suspended. He's under investigation. He, you know, documents have come out, Iran International, Semaphore, Lee Smith have all documented these incredible leaks that have shown that Robert Malley, essentially got Iranian agents, at least one, who is still, I want to say she's the assistant to the secretary, she's like the assistant to the Secretary of Defense assistant or something like that, right? She's some sort of official. She's out there. She's an insider. And she's an Iranian agent. I mean, like, I'm hesitant to say things I can't verify, but this is like Robert Malley. There are email exchanges that show that Robert Malley was able to get this person into a high position within the American government, who essentially is working to promote the narrative of Iran and to promote the type of relationship with America that Iran would like to see. And we were talking about yesterday that contrary to popular belief, the State Department has always been anti-Israel.
Yep.
From the first moment of its existence, it's always been pro-Soviet and anti-Israel.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the State Department, just like with Kissinger, if they had intel coming in that they didn't share. I mean, now here's the thing. I mean, what we can almost say without having a commission, right, and the proper investigation, is we can all kind of say it's not possible for October 7th to happen if there weren't people who knew about it and just didn't take it seriously or listen to the people telling them, right? We know, we can say that there were almost surely people in the intelligence agencies in Israel who had gotten tips from, you know, from people in the IDF,
and it's already public. Israel has already, it's all public. Right. The intelligence had everything, had all the plans. They knew it. They knew it.
Here's the problem: that does not mean that this was a false flag,
right,
or an inside job.
Correct.
These people on the right and the health freedom people are mixing up words. They're not using the proper definitions for words. It's very rare. I can't think of a single, you know, like black swan attack like October 7th that happened where there wasn't some sort of intelligence coming in alerting people. Look at Pearl Harbor, look at 9/11, the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is always the case that these things could have been prevented, that there are signals and noise coming in, and the higher ups do not do their due diligence and actually take it seriously. Okay, so this is not some sort of huge, you know, like, you know, drama, you know, that we need to, that some sexy drama that the health freedom people want to make it out to be of, like, oh, there are people who knew. Like, this happens all the time with these types of attacks that they could have been, that they're preventable. But that does not mean, like, a false flag means that it was perpetrated from inside.
Yeah.
It's not like just because people knew about it and they didn't do anything does not mean that it was orchestrated by the government.
Right.
That's a whole other level of conspiratorial thinking that has no evidence to support it. But because there are incidents of that, and because it's really there's something very satisfying of thinking like that.
Right.
That's what people have chosen to believe about 10-7.
And then circling around to the point of how so many people in these communities are just jumping at the bit to believe the Jew-hating narrative behind everything. Again, whether the freedom medical freedom community or those who are listening to Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and the others in that grouping, or even worse than the two of them, and there are a few. One thing I like to give over to for people to understand, but especially Jews, we were blessed to grow up in what I call a 70-year post-Holocaust bubble. Why do I call it the bubble? Because at least I grew up in New York, the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, very little anti-Semitism, right? There was Jew hatred here and there. And again, in terms of America specifically, but you know, throughout the West, very, very little. It was very safe to grow up a Jew, definitely in New York City, but in most places in America. But it was a bubble. Because before the Holocaust, Jews lived with anti-Semitism everywhere. Even when things were good in Germany, there still was anti-Semitism. It was just better than it used to be. So for Jews to live with anti-Semitism was the norm, wasn't the exception. And today, it's back as the norm, but we were blessed to live in a time period where it was the exception, and hence I call it the bubble. Because whatever reason, this can get to in another time, but part of the DNA of the world is an innate hatred towards the Jew, and the way I explain it, because the Jew is the representation of God in the world. And the acceptance of God is something a man has to work towards. It goes against human nature. Is I don't want to believe in a God. I don't want to believe that I have a purpose. I don't believe that I have something better to be expecting of myself to live. And everything today is basically Western culture today is all anti-God. Narcissism is anti-God.
Sure.
Totally. But so it's innate that people, when they're given the chance to jump and make conclusions, they don't stop themselves with, oh, no, I'm not a Jew hater. Now it's now totally kosher to publicly hate a Jew and even support the genocide of Jews. No one's embarrassed about it anymore. But it's a sad thing to internalize, but I want people to understand, like, no, that's not the exemption. Like, this is that's the nature of society.
Right.
Don't run away from this. And the best way to fight it, like what I try to use my platform for, is allow people to strengthen their Jewish identity. That's the best. The best
no
defense
doubt.
Good, the
There's
good offense.
No doubt about that.
It's not about stopping
Jewish
that person.
100%.
And teaching him about the Holocaust is not going to have him stop hating Jews.
Right.
If anything, it's going to have him hate you even more because, oh, you're using the Holocaust card. And again, whether they're deniers or not, it doesn't make a difference. Like, oh, you're playing the victim. Like, no, teaching about the Holocaust is not going to make Jew hatred go away.
No.
Standing up for yourself, being a proud Jew, supporting the Jewish state of Israel, doing everything necessary. The world, humanity, human nature respects strength and self-respect. Mm-hmm. When you don't have that self-respect, you are easily taken advantage of and they'll walk all over you. But when you have that self-respect, you respect your ancestral identity, your Jewish identity, that's when the people start thinking, I can't mess with the Jew, regardless of how much they hate or not.
Right.
But
yeah, I agree with you. And I think people too need to understand that because it's, you know, I think the oldest hatred, right, that exists, it constantly shifts and it morphs. And so it'll never, ever, ever go away.
Right.
Because it's fundamentally a conspiracy that allows it to take on different shapes depending on what a society needs at any given moment. right? And so anti-Semitism from one point in time is not going to look like anti-Semitism today.
Right.
It will still have the same fundamental, ideas, but, you know, the character will, you know, on the surface, it'll be a little different, right? It won't be the Jewish lobby. It'll be the Israel lobby. It won't be, you know, we're poisoning the wells. It'll be we're poisoning the water of Palestinians, of right?
All right.
And it won't be, you know, Jews are not white, not Aryan. It'll be now Jews are white and powerful and privileged.
Right, they change the narrative.
But it's the same idea of Jews being of punching up, of Jews being of the small group of Jews manipulating society, having disproportionate control, right? Having sinister intentions, whether, you know, whether globalist or Zionist, right? Whatever it is, Jews can be used, for whatever purpose and ideology,
we're hated for being the capitalists. We're hated for being the socialists. Like, we don't want, you're right. A Jew is everything. They're all types of Jews, all types of Jews. And it's interesting because you brought up in terms of being an irrational, right? The Jew hatred is irrational. I love Melanie Phillips' line. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
She's amazing.
Yeah. So she says, and this calls out the hypocrisy of it all. She goes, two different hatreds are basically talked about today, especially, right? One is Jew hating anti-Semitism, and the other is Islamophobia, right? Uh-huh. Islamophobia, it's not a phobia. Mm-hmm. There's rational fear of Islam. There's no phobia of fearing Muslims or Islam. Mm-hmm. But Jew hatred, that's irrational. Mm-hmm. And yet everyone calls out, and the whole emphasis is about, oh, no, we have to fight Islamophobia. Yeah, they're not fighting Jew hating. They just, it's words only and actions, no action.
Yeah, I know. I mean, are there people that like hate Muslims? Absolutely there are. But like the term Islamophobia is such a smokescreen. Yep. Like, you know, I would never, like, I've come across not many, but I've come across a few people that I really do genuinely believe hate Muslims. But I would never say they're Islamophobic. I think that term is ridiculous. Like, I would just say they hate Muslims. They're anti-Muslim. They're a Muslim hater or something like that.
100%.
Right? Like, because that term, even if we look at the origins of the term Islamophobia and where it comes from, it was always meant to be used as like a distraction from incredibly anti-democratic and theocratic threats from within the Islamist community, and it was always wielded as a distraction from that, as a distraction from a legitimate threat that Islamic fundamentalism posed to Western civilization.
Karis, it has been wonderful to finally have this interview with you. We've been talking about doing this for a while, and there are plenty of other topics we want to talk about as well. So we'll get to that another time, because I know you have to run. But thank you so much. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
All right, everyone. How do they follow you, Karis?
You can find me on Twitter, or X, as it's now called. It's just my last name and my first name. So at Rhea Karis. And you can also just Google me and you'll see articles and media and podcasts as well.
Amazing. All right.
And of course, Epoch Times. Subscribe to Epoch Times.
There you go. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Pulse of Israel here in Washington, D.C. Please God, very soon I will be back in my homeland, in our homeland of the Land of Israel. If you are not yet a subscriber to Pulse of Israel daily videos podcast, go pulseofisrael.com and sign up. You could follow for the short videos on Instagram, Avi Abelow, or Pulse of Israel. And if you enjoy the footage, the content we put out there, and you want to help support our work to ensure more people get to see these videos and these messages, just click on the donate button every once in a while on pulseofisrael.com. Shalom, everyone, and thanks for watching.
Pulse of Israel, frontline videos from the Holy Land. Support our work by donating today.